Okay, guys.
Good morning.
Why is it red, by the way? Should it be red?
Oh, it's red.
Now, this is red. Was it red? It's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, no one cares. Okay, good morning.
As long as we have a signal.
We have signal. Oh, the signal is strong.
Okay. Strong. So, I'm eating my sandwich first, so you start talking.
Yeah, so this is our 8th podcast, I think.
Wow.
Wow. It's already an octave.
I think
it's already a byte.
Ooh.
Before it was pot bit, now it's pot byte.
Yeah. Mm. So maybe we would just make 10, because it's getting like, now the first 3 or 4 were like actual fun, and now it's kind of like, we need to make a podcast, right?
Yeah. The pressure is up.
Yeah, the pressure is up.
Yeah. But that's
for continuous delivery.
I mean, if you're famous, then you have to deliver. That's how it is.
Mm. Not like the Flink guys.
Oh, damn it. We didn't even, not even announce what the topic is, and he's already ranting about Flink.
No, I'm not ranting. I'm just showing my jealousness.
Okay. You're showing that you are jealous.
Is that a word? Yeah, I want to say I'm jealous, but yeah. Can you like make it an adjective?
I guess so, but maybe we don't.
Ah. Mm.
Yeah, today we are talking about process streaming.
Stream processors.
Stream processor projects.
Mm. Because you found a nice article on the web.
Yeah, on the interweb.
From the newstack.io. All the Apache streaming projects, an exploratory guide.
The NewStack. Yeah, in the NewStack, they have a couple of podcasts as well. And sometimes, or let's say 50%, I just delete. But some are very, very interesting. And the website has also very nice and forward-looking articles. So they had a forward, what was the last one I read? Forgot, but it was very exciting. No, but they have
so exciting.
So
was
exciting.
It?
Now they have good good stuff. So I recommend subscribing to the NewStack.io, and I don't get money from them, so maybe I should ask. But we have only 2 listeners, so maybe they won't pay me.
I maybe also think we just. I'm not so sure about the 2. I think
you maybe it's 3 or maybe it's more 1.
I think it's more okay, there is a new podcast, let's skip through it. Okay, thanks.
And then send a tweet like, oh, liked it very much, just to please us.
Yeah.
Damn it. And
to please us.
It's the last 2 times we did even get tweets.
Right. So
please tweet.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want any attention.
Mm. That was just for us.
Okay. So, I can go through the notes and you interrupt me, or
let's do this.
Okay. Oh, now I need to bark. That's not good.
To what? Mm. To bark. We need a whisper taste.
I'm sorry.
At some point,
it will just like. Will be disgusting.
Yeah, you I can take down the master and then you can, but maybe that we shouldn't talk about it. What about a little introduction? So what were we talking about anyway?
So streaming projects. Streaming?
Why do I need streaming?
Yeah. So the motivation here in the blog article, I guess it's more that you have an awful lot amount of data and you want to process them, and classically you would have some MapReduce. I think in a former podcast we already mentioned it. So in the end you have a large amount of data, and you can think of the data as like bounded data sets which are finite. So you can think of, give me the Wikipedia. That's a finite data set. It underlies changes, of course, and there's a constant stream of changes to it, but you can think of, like, if you download a dump, that's a finite data set, where when you have like an active infrastructure, for instance, and you collect your logs and your metrics and events, you have an unbounded data set. And yeah, with regards to the size, you might need other technologies to actually be able to process this in near real time. And if you want to process big data sets in near real time that are unbounded, then you would have the need for a stream processor, meaning you feed your unbounded data set into a system which can store and dispatch your unbounded data set, which, like, yeah, it's a stream. Like, it starts somewhere and it might be end somewhere, but you as a processor think of it as like an infinite data set.
Yeah, and not only is it about the source, right? I mean, it's about what you want to do with the source. I mean, you could say, I have Twitter and I'm only caring about, give me the top 5 topics yesterday. And this would be a bounded context again, a bounded data set again, because you say, okay,
it's give yesterday. Me it's
yesterday.
Day. It's
and yesterday is finite. Day. Yeah. But if you want to know what are the current top 5 or from the last hour, it depends if you have a sliding window or if you have like...
Yeah, and that's where it becomes interesting. And actually, there are 2 other blog posts that we need to go over in the next and the uber next podcast, where the details are more explained in terms of like, what are you actually looking at? There's a huge problem in all stream... not all, because one of the mentioned later says it has solved it, and that's the exactly once delivery thing. So if you want to have exact results, like saying you aggregate over your stream and you have an integer in it that goes awesomeness and it counts up and down, and you want to have the average of it over a window, that window now decides the definition of the exactness of your result, right? If you don't count anything in that window, you will not have the exact number.
Yeah. So if you count like one locked in and one locked out, it should always level out.
Yeah. And now the problem resolves when your user on the side logs in, you have that, he's logged in, and then something happened to your infrastructure and the log out event comes the day after the fact.
Yeah, or comes twice. Or
so
comes
during after the fact, you will have him as an active session for like the whole day, but actually he might log out himself after a few hours. So your counting of active users in that time window is wrong. Yeah. But that's wrong because you cannot. Some events might come later into the processing, and that's another important distinction is between the times when you see an event in your processing pipeline, which is a processing time, and the time that the event actually occurred. So that would be a timestamp when a code emits an event.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
Amen. And event process, event time and process time.
Yeah, that's very important. Yeah, and it helps you to identify that you might have a problem, meaning that you, for your whatever you do, the windows are not right, or not all events in your current event time slice window are not there. You can now see later on if you had mistakes.
Yeah,
so you cannot. I mean, there's no way around that some events might not occur in the time of aggregation and you have incomplete windows or.
And what is the solution? I mean, we are just 5 minutes in. Don't want to jump to the conclusion, but okay, 10 minutes.
Some would say always program everything in Clojure, and some other people would say always program everything in Scala. That's
no, easy I mean,
as that.
I mean, we general. Is it that you say, our my real life, a real time unbounded thingy is just an estimation or just an So no, that you don't count on it?
Yeah, maybe we should have taken the other blog post first. But yeah, so we have, I don't know if I'm, yeah. So we will see some processing frameworks, and one would be Storm, one is Spark, one is Flink, and the other one was from Google.
It was Beam.
Beam, yeah, and resolved out of Google's approach with some other company, I don't know. So everybody tries to tackle this exactly once delivery and the notion of event and processing time. So when you do aggregation in a distributed fault tolerant system and you have exactly once delivery semantics, you can assume that you only count, for instance, like 5 users and then add them up with another 5 users, and you see this event, the first event of 5 and the second event of 5, only 2 times, and then you're good. Then, because you're from the delivery semantics of the events, you are correct. You only count them once, exactly once. There are other delivery semantics which are called at least once, so you might see it. That just means you might see the event, but what it actually means is we losing events.
Well, at least once?
Yeah.
And at most once. At least once would say, okay, you get it one or 2 times or 3 times.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, I confused it. Right. So you get it. You get duplicates. That's what at least once means. And at least, at most once is... it's too early. I can't.
No,
think.
Yeah. No, at most. But it's. I think it's at least once delivery.
At least once for me was mindestens einmal.
Yeah. Is it at least once is mindestens einmal.
Which allows for more to come, which allows duplicates.
No, at most. At most once, at least once, and exactly once.
So, and at most?
At most delivery means for each message is handled to the mechanism, the message is delivered 0 or 1 times.
Yeah, right. So you're losing messages. That's at most, and at least is duplicates. So both of them are like... But for real analytics, that's not an option, actually.
But is there... Where... Is at most once good? I mean, it's
good enough. So it's, for instance, if you for ordering, for example, you can add one in your bucket, and then you have one. But if you press something goes wrong, and you have 100 things in your basket, you would go to the next step on the purchase side and it would pop up with 100 thingies. You would wonder, but you would correct it because you don't want 100 headphones from Bose. You may not be able to afford it.
Some.
But on the... Yeah. anyways, so there are use cases for it, and often you can solve these problems that occur, like on a business side. You can have a call center that handles these mistakes. You can have falling back to your user, give him a shitty result, and then say, go with it. It doesn't matter because...
Yeah, okay, but you said there's a blog post we want to talk about next time, and we will talk about exactly this,
coming back.
Let's come back. But this is very interesting. I'm looking forward... Even 15 minutes in this podcast, I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, okay. We have a great marketing department. Yeah. So
okay,
we can go over and start.
Summarization of what we just said. We have like real time data. Unbounded stream of information, and we want to do something with it in real time. We don't want to wait. Okay, we look at the yesterday's logs or the last hour's logs, because this would be a bounded context. Again, it's boring because everyone can do, it's like batches.
It's batch processing, but it's actually processing. There are many, like we will see this, hopefully this comes out here. So all of the projects we are now referring to have different approaches to what they do, what they are there for, what they're explicitly about and not. Yeah. So,
okay, let's jump right in. First one.
Apache Flume is one of the oldest Apache projects designed to collect, aggregate and move large data sets such as weblogs and to a centralized location. So it was one of the oldest, but the main things in a Flume system is a source, a channel and a sink. So very simple. You need to get your data from somewhere. On a channel, you will just move them to somewhere, and that somewhere should be your sink. And that's like that's all of it.
And Flume is the channel there, or Flume no, is the
Flume,
agent?
No, Flume has now, it's a Java project, and you can now write your source. So you will write an adapter and read from JDBC. You read from Kafka, actually. All these modules are already there, so you just hook them up and glue them together.
Or you can send your syslogs directly to Flume?
No, I don't think that this does not work on in a push scenario. I think I can just mention it because I never worked with it.
Yeah, me too.
On code, so I just believe what the blog post says about it. So you can have stream, like one scenario seems to be streaming logs from multiple sources capable of running a GVM. So you could have like an agent running on your box, collecting the log files from the system you are observing and then sending it to the central Apache Flume installation where then the data gets added into a channel, and from there on they just move into a sink. It's basically moving data around. It's not really analytics or processing.
And you can push. So you can have the source could be netcat.
Yeah.
So you can just.
But it makes exactly that sound. Once you are on the command line and you use netcat, it always goes.
And you can store the configuration in ZooKeeper.
Oh. So, every time I heard, if I hear ZooKeeper, I always have to go and refer back to ZeroMQ's introduction and where Peter Hinchens talks at great length about how simple it is to use ZeroMQ and why it's. And then he makes an example. There seems to be a documentation of like 1,000 sites only explaining the protocol of ZooKeeper. And he describes this in a very funny way. So if you read the user guide from ZeroMQ, there's a laugh about ZooKeeper. But yeah. I have to like, it's cool that this is around. Kafka works with it and a lot other stuff, and we use it. I use it now more often and on a daily basis. I have to look into it, so. It's there. Maybe a bit.
As we said, it's the oldest project, and there is a need to use a better syslog server, right? And this seems to be the replacement for syslog with a lot of cool outputs, inputs.
It's a cool, cool incremental improvement.
Yeah, yeah. It had its time.
Yeah, and the next one would be Apache Spark. It actually says it is the hottest technology in the big data ecosystem. Yeah. And I don't know I think it's Databricks that are behind it, or is it the company behind Cassandra? I don't know. There's a company behind it.
No, Databricks, I think.
And it should be the successor over the Hadoop infrastructure, MapReduce, and the Hive, Peak, and whatsoever tooling around Hadoop. They claim to be 100 times faster than Hadoop MapReduce.
Yeah, but this is everyone claims this. You come up with a new thing and
then
well,
I mean, there's 100%. Something to it because they actually process their data in memory. So just by using the in-memory and not relying on files on the disk, which MapReduce does, it, of course it's faster. What is interesting is the abstraction they do over the data sets. They call them RDDs, which is called Resilient Distributed Dataset. And so they split up data into one RDD, and then they distribute this RDD across all the nodes. And it's kind of like you have access to this RDD from one machine over another machine. So they share memory across nodes, which is actually mutable shared state. But since it's written in Scala, this is awesome.
It's distributed memory?
Yeah, yeah, they share, like you can, it's a bit tricky. I saw once a working example where you have this RDD, you fill it up and you use it. And normally everything with simple things goes fine, but then if you try to do this aggregation and adding, sometimes you would have the need to add one line where you go now sync or something, where you send a signal from the one node to the other node that you are at a specific line. So they need, of course, they need to have some synchronization so that you, here's an, again, the semantics of exactly once processing, where you're like, I'm through this item,
yeah.
I'm not there yet, blah, blah, blah. And so you need, but it's all through distributed messaging and in-memory stuff.
So can you add another Spark node to the topology, or do you have to bring it down and?
No. You can add like that's yeah. That's my understanding. You can add nodes at runtime. It's just that that's 1.5 year or 1 year ago. It's all not that easy actually, because once you have a running job and it's like distributed and it does its stuff and you add a node, it's very unlikely actually that your job gains from it, or if it gains, it pauses everything, waits for anything to come up, sync all the data to it, jams the network and then goes up. So your speed gain, of course, theoretically you have a speed gain, but then there's a lot of management to it and communication going on that just manages the job itself, which is always in the street. Like Storm has the same thing. Anyway.
Yeah, that's my understanding from my distributed computing background as well. So you have a domain, you span it across 5 nodes, and you cannot add a new node to this shared memory domain. You have to...
Well, you can, and the job will live on. It will not die. It will just slow it down because it has to do some work.
Snapshot. In my opinion, it has to snapshot and get and restore with one more node.
Yeah, but
anyway.
So the resilient distributed data set, actually the resilient in that means it is replicated.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a node, there will be just an off-topic job. Say your job requires this data set, but then the data set itself in Spark will be there forever. So another job can easily go and use the same RDD, and then it will be just distributed across all nodes in the cluster.
But is it then a shared memory, or is it just a distributed, so like replicated memory?
No, it is shared. It's both. It's like
can you access the memory region of another host from one node?
No.
Then it's not shared.
Well, not from your program, but the RDD itself would know which parts of itself lies on which node.
Yeah, okay. So you have the index of the... But it's not that you can access an RDD on a different node. You know, just
no,
know...
An RDD is like your view to... like this is like cluster view, right? The RDD is just everywhere.
Yeah, if but you want, it's if replicated.
If you want to have line 10 of your RDD, say it's a line file, you want to have line 10, you might have hit a local replica of line 10 on your node.
Here we go.
Or you do not hit it, and then it will get it from the other node where line 10 lives.
Okay, so and, you have a map where you can know where to find the RDD. Maybe you have it locally, or you have to fetch it from someone else. But the
You have the RDD. The question is, what parts of the RDD live on your local node? Mm-hmm. The RDD is everywhere. Like the index in Elasticsearch is everywhere.
Ah, okay, so RDD is not one item of information?
No.
It's a complete thing.
It's a complete thing.
Ah. Okay.
It's a bit like, I explained it in that way, and I don't think really if it's that practical.
Then I misunderstood. I understood RDD once that you have an RDD and it hits one of the thingies in Spark. How are they called? Sync? No, was it?
No, they
in Bolts.
That's Storm. No, you have a worker node. It's
a Spark. If you transform information, you will create a new RDD.
That's right. RDDs are also immutable.
So it is one item of work. So I have one lock event, and this lock event will be one RDD?
Yeah, but now you make the lock event and split it at a white space, and you get a list of items, and that's a new RDD.
And it's not 10 use RDD?
It depends on, RDDs? Like, there's a huge, like, the config file is big. You can definitely set how many replications do you have. How many partitions do you want to have in your RDD? Like, say you have 10 nodes, you want to have 10 partitions.
But
to utilize all the machines equally.
But I guess you could also say, okay, a lock comes in, and then this lock has information about a counter that I want to process and something else. And it comes in, and from this RDD, I create 5 new independent RDDs.
Mm-hmm.
And not one RDD that is a list of 5 items.
No.
But no.
No. Yeah, you are right. You can do this. And now the Spark has 2 modes. It has a batch mode and it has a streaming mode. And the abstraction RDD works for everything, apparently. So mm-hmm. that's where it gets really confusing. So RDDs are very nice in the terms of batch, right?
Yeah.
I have my... my bounded data set, that's all closed. I split them up into 8 partitions, so now I have 8 single pieces that all together give 1, blah blah blah. And now I distribute it across my 8 node cluster, all fine. I make replication 1, all cool. So now I can work on every node with all my code, I have access to all the data, and in terms of fault tolerance, I have always a backup somewhere. That's cool. So, but in streaming, this is kind of like now RDD is like open-ended.
Mm.
But they use the same abstraction for it, and...
So they have to micro-batch.
Could lead in. So, yeah, in terms of processing, they send micro-batches around. And they append micro-batches. If you like connect to, say, an SQL query, and you stream out of your SQL database, you will always append to an RDD.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, that's handled all internally in Apache Spark. And so what's exactly going on in stream processing in Apache Spark, I didn't touch it.
Yeah. So okay, but I think we covered it quite nice. And it's written in Scala. You already said this and ranted about it.
No,
with nice
man,
German humor.
It's just to, like, go from... My thingy.
But it seems that Flume and Spark you see quite often as a starting point, right? Everyone who wants to do stream processing for a while, they know about Flume and they know about Spark. Somehow.
Yeah. So in general, it's a real ecosystem. So. Similar to Hadoop, where you say you have Hadoop, and if you look at Cloudera's Hadoop, you don't have Hadoop. You have you have a distributed file system. You have an MapReduce capabilities where you have also a task scheduler and a rescheduler for fault tolerance. You have an analytics pipeline. You have a script engine. You have a transformation engine. you have a whole ecosystem of tools that allow you to work with this particular technology. And I would categorize Spark and Flink in the same way. Spark is a bit...
Spark and Flink or Spark and Flume?
No, Spark and Flink.
Flink, okay.
But Flume is just give the data, put it there, and then from there, send it there. It's just shifting data around. There's no analytics framework in Flume. In Flink, you have a whole bunch of stuff. In Spark, you have the Graph API, you have the SQL API, you have the streaming API, and you have the batch API. And you have Spark ML, which is referred to as Spark Machine Learning. So you can do a lot, but then always there's a good amount of engineering time needed to actually come to your solution. It's just like basically a toolkit where you can. I wouldn't even say it's a toolkit. It's you need to compose your tools actually. It's very. I found it to be very raw when once I was using it. I guess very simple stuff you can achieve very fast. There's a lot example code out there. You get started and running, but once you do, how do I really do exactly one semantics? How do I do really the right aggregation? And then which kind of machine learning algorithm? Where do I, like, for instance, it's cool, you can train your model if you do machine learning. So you have a Bayes classifier that does spam detection for you for some reason, and you add all your data that you're seeing into it all the time. Continuously. Mm-hmm. So it's learning the statistics all the time. That's fine. That's cool. That does work. But now you want to apply this model. So what are you doing now? You need to have a way to serialize back all your learned statistics and then run a web service that applies an unseen event to your trained model and then gives you back the result. When I was using Spark, that was not solved. There was no way you could serialize away your model. Once you have trained it, which is a bit, so you need to solve this problem by yourself.
Yeah. And so you created this model, but to apply this model.
Yeah, there's no as I said, it's 1 year ago. Maybe they have now better tooling around it, but there was no way you could learn, but you could not deploy. Or there was no easy way to say, yeah, and now apply my machine learning model. And maybe they have fixed it, I don't know. But at that time, it was kind of like, okay, now I need to write tooling that gives me my results. And so there was... It's all awesome from the documentation. And once you hit your real problem, there's much more to it than you initially thought of, maybe. Or you expect so... You have so high expectations to the framework that they don't fulfill it, really.
Okay.
The next thing would be Apache Storm. I would also, for me, that's the oldest one, actually, because that's the first one I ever touched. It was developed by Nathan Maas at Backtype, and then the company was acquired by Twitter. Nathan Maas also wrote the book called Big Data. We mentioned it before in the podcast, I guess. And he is also responsible for a thing called Lambda Architecture, where he has, two ways of processing data. So you have a batch way where you have results, or you compute views in a batch way that has a long running. Most of the time, these batch processes are running for a long time and come up with a result. And parallel to this, you have a real-time view that goes and accumulates your streaming data in a near real-time sense. So you have both all the results from your history and the current history that you couldn't load into the last batch of just that was running.
Yeah, so you want to have the views per hour, and the current hour will not be aggregated until the hour is over, but you have a real-time job that sums up while the hour is ongoing.
Right, that's a good example, yeah. So Storm makes it easy to reliably process unbounded streams of data doing real-time processing with Hadoop, what Hadoop did for batch processing. So it guarantees every tuple will be processed at least once. And here's a thing that I need to mention. There's a library on top of Storm that is called Trident, and Trident has exactly once delivery semantics.
Mm.
So you can do exactly once delivery with Storm. So Storm is designed in terms of spouts and bolts, and spouts is are usually seen as input sources, and bolts are processing units, and you would compose a topology out of spouts and bolts, and a topology is a direct acyclic graph, a DAG, and yeah, you would then compile it down into one jar, and that this jar you send to your Storm processor head, if you will, which is called Nimbus, and this Nimbus would take your jar, apply the topology, distribute your code over the working nodes, and then launches the spouts, and then the streaming, then the data starts flowing through the topology and will be executed on every node in the Storm.
But you cannot change your topology, as it is a direct acyclic graph.
Yeah, no, a running topology needs to be stopped, undeployed, and redeployed.
Yeah.
And okay, it's a pain in the butt,
yeah,
to go and see why is hanging, where it's hanging, what caused the problem, and to launch a Storm cluster, I don't know. I found it very hard. And yeah, it's a... But in the end, if you have a trained SREs who brought up like your Hadoop infrastructure anyways, this is all easy. It's very similar, same patterns apply. You can use the same stuff. Once you have automated it with stuff like Ansible or Puppet or something, you can just fire it up. And if you're not concerned with it and you have it once running, it will run. And it's still used at some places. Did I not mark this? It's used by Twitter, Yahoo, and Flipboard, whatever that is.
Flipboard, I used once. It's a news aggregator site where you have like tiles of news.
Uh-huh.
It's like it tries to be a newspaper, a digital newspaper.
Oh, nice.
Where you have like the articles.
And does it work? Does it walk?
It walks. It has been a long time that I have used it. I used it for my iPad, I think, back in the days.
Oh.
For half a year, and then
I was thinking of the same, now completely off topic. When you go through the web and you have links here and there and multiple sources, I told you that you should have something that collects it, crawls it, makes like these nice views that you get from the Firefox when you make the reader view, or in Safari where you have like make the site like readable. And then once in a, like at the end of the month, all these thingies, all your sites get sent to a printer and comes up with a nice magazine, like a really high styled magazine. Like, I don't know what's a high styled magazine.
And that's a free startup advice. Get rich fast.
Oh shit. Damn.
Where you can, yeah, and then you take the items you read, so like this article or
yeah,
so, and then you can print it for your friends, like your nerd friends.
You get this one thing, and it does some clustering for you, so all your tech articles that are belonging to stream processing are in the chapter for stream processing, and then programming language anywhere, and then maybe, I don't know what you else have, sports or so, and then... Yeah, and you have this, and you get this one copy, and you think, oh, that's great. Great month for me. And then you go give it a friend, and you give him, like, here, you can purchase it. And then you get, like, half of it.
Oh.
Like, the publisher gets...
Wait. We have to cut this out. And then, yeah. And then you're, like, an editor during your...
Yeah, and your friends can subscribe. Friends can follow and subscribe to you, and you will also buy some of... them. Maybe you have friends that recommend stuff, like in Twitter, but with hardware, basically. Hardware in terms of magazines.
Ooh.
Oh, and you have the image from the web, and you just... Well, that would be a problem. Images from the web are badly printable. It wouldn't look great.
Maybe also you have to buy the article.
Nah.
you have to license
copyright.
It.
Nah.
Ah, okay. Nah, yeah, copyright.
Stopping. Nah.
Yeah, the details are still... Okay.
Anyway.
Back to Storm.
Yeah, no, that's actually it.
Okay. Then on to the next.
Yeah, it's called, and I have no idea, maybe you will take over. It's called Patchy Neefy. And for me, it looks like talent.
Talent?
Oh, have you never heard of talent?
No.
It's called, it's spelled T-A-L-E-N-D. Talent.
No.
And surprise for you, no, I want to see a big laugh. It's made from French people.
Okay.
You know what that means. You told me about a company that does... And engineers from that region of the world. It's very, it's awesome. It says on the website, we are awesome.
Okay.
Well, and they have a UI and they are very similar. So, and here, it is based on enterprise integration patterns.
That EIP. Me.
Yeah. Every time you see enterprise and integration,
and then an pattern. Acronym.
Oh. Yeah, that's alarming. That's really alarming.
But what they have... And they have a nice GUI. I mean, it's enterprise.
Yeah, of course. They have only engineers called Bob and Blob, who are fat blogs, who are just clicking together stuff and have never programmed.
Yeah, but I mean, this is unique, right?
Yeah, there's no other stream processor that has a UI for some reason. Maybe you don't need it.
Yeah, but if it's like if... I don't want to say...
I know, but this is different.
Yeah.
It's different if you like.
But it could be like the Lego Mindstorms of. Okay, that's not enterprise. But no,
so I know how this works. You do all this UI stuff, and then it compiles down to a huge file which has a lot of Java code in it. Like huge in terms of like 20,000 lines of code. One file. Now find the bug.
Yeah, sure.
It's stupid.
It's like, how was it, the Microsoft front page? No, how was the editor for websites called in the office space? Was it front page? Maybe it was front page. Anyway, but it was back in the days, like 10 years ago when I had my apprenticeship, we created a website, Hello World website with it, and it was huge.
Yeah. Yeah, you need this, and then you need this, and to be sure you...
Yeah, and then you make a diff here, and you make a diff here, and
yeah, it's just necessary.
That was crazy shit.
Yeah, no, and if you... Like, maybe I never used it, I'm just ranting upon experience I had with different projects. I assume this to be like that, but maybe it isn't, and I have no idea, so that's all relative.
But we should have a look. I mean, it
No!
No!
I don't... It's again, my previous has died on me.
No, but imagine you have, and it says IoT, okay, that's like an enterprise thingy, so they have to mention IoT. But if you want to prototype simple stuff with it, and you want to be intuitive, and you're the engineers or the guys who want to create these workflows are not that skilled. And they don't want to write Java code.
So not every... Right, exactly. There is a need for it because I know some engineers that are just working in huge factories, having assembly lines to manage, and there's they have some programming department that just integrates software into their enterprise bus, and they have like a lot of stuff going on. And you don't want to have a dedicated team that does your streaming engine and programs
with
that.
Java programmers.
Ooh. No. So you have a UI and then you plug your sensors into it and it's just running.
Yeah, and it's self-service.
Yeah. And it might be a good fit, actually. And there's no critics about it, basically.
Yeah, and we haven't used it.
I have not used it and it doesn't support my programmer lifestyle. So I hate it. Ooh. And you ruin our stage, man. And what I like... Here is at the very end, they say they make a distinction between real processing, which they call a hot path, and batch processing, they call a cold path. So that's a reoccurring pattern. Like every stream processor, every stream processor we had now has always the notion of I can do batch processing and I can do real time processing. And it's just like a variety of how they do it, but I can think of a hot path in like a manufacturer or a factory way better than in terms of like, I mean, maybe the company we work for, you can say our infrastructure is kind of a fabric, but it doesn't apply so much. But if I think
I think it applies as well. If you have log data, you have SREs or you have ops guys, they are more the real-time processing guys because they want to know, okay, my rack burns. Oh.
What's going on here?
Oh, what's going on? And then you have the BI guys. They say, okay, how many racks burned yesterday?
Yeah, of course.
Then you have hot pass and cold pass, because the hot pass is like, it's already burning, it's still burning, and cold pass, if it's already stopped
how
burning.
Can we not make it burn again?
Yeah, or how can we tell the sea level how many bricks burned yesterday?
Maybe nice for I actually will recommend the next visit I do in West Germany to family. I will mention that maybe.
And I will make a container for it.
Uh-oh.
Then,
okay. Next one, Apache FX. DataTorrent, a Silicon Valley-based company, donated one of its real-time streaming commercial products to the Apache Foundation, which is now called Apache Apex.
And our listeners could tell that he just came up with this sentence.
Yeah, it was completely out of my mind.
Wow,
if I scroll preview, it dies on me. I cannot...
Okay, and it's positioned as an alternative to Storm and Spark for real-time stream processing.
And it claims to be 10-100 times faster than Spark.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, no. And so Spark is already using shared memory. Maybe they use shared level 2 caches.
Is this even a thing?
I guess I don't know. But
And it comes with enterprise features. That's now I'm worried again.
Yeah, that's a worry again.
Guaranteed order of event delivery.
And here, unlike Spark, which needs strong Scala skills, Apex can be used by existing Java developers. It essentially says, for Spark, you need to be a really hardworking, hard knowledgeable computer scientist, and to use Apex, you can just use these stupid Java developers who have no idea what's going on. it's quite offending, this sentence.
Yeah, it's very offending. Yeah.
But anyways, so same thing. It uses what is already there. So most companies already have some kind of a Hadoop installation somewhere. You can use Yarn as your yet another resource negotiator to schedule.
Perfect.
Schedule your jobs and execute them. Something else. So again, the distinction between stream job and batch job. Yeah.
But it worries me still. It is positioned as industry's only open source enterprise grade engine capable of handling batch data as well as streaming data needs. I mean, bullshit bingo, I have already 4 marked in a row. I mean, one more and then I have bingo.
Bingo!
Yeah. Data in motion platform. Bingo!
Yeah. Well, maybe there is like you have... So for 10 years, you got a whole lot of people in doing Excel for you, right? You have this finance department, you do all these accounting stuff, and you have a horde of Excel gurus.
Yeah.
And now your data is too big for Excel. This might be applied because it's still a UI. Nobody's interested what's really going on behind the scenes.
But is there a UI? There's no UI.
I think so.
There is?
Maybe
I don't think so.
Okay.
Oh no, but visualization tools, business analytics. Maybe there is.
So
yeah, but okay, I will look at the Nifi. I won't look at Apex.
And also you can use your message bus, you can... there's a whole lot of things that you can just bound together. The one SRE who is managing that system in one particular company, he will be dead within 5 years managing this. But every other person who is skilled in Excel might be quite happy.
Yeah, let's skip Apex. I don't like it already. Let's go to Kafka Streams.
Ooh.
Boo.
No, not boo. Woo.
Yeah, woo. Yeah, yeah. Woo. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kafka woo. Streams.
Yeah. Yeah, we like it. I like it.
Already.
Because you don't need Hadoop anymore.
Yay!
Yay!
So no yarn as well?
No yarn.
Yay!
Yay!
No Zookeeper?
Yeah, no.
Oh, no. But for Kafka Streams, you don't need Zookeeper, right?
Yeah,
it's
well,
like you need it for Kafka.
You need Kafka. But yeah, so Confluent, the company behind Kafka, invented a new library called Kafka Streams, and they basically use their new consumers to be able to read from a topic and read from multiple topics. Even that's cool.
Isn't Samza also a Apache project?
Yeah. And
so coming. Maybe we should talk about some, or is it
it's
below?
It comes next.
But isn't it more before Kafka Streams?
Yeah, rewriting history, doesn't matter. Psh, shut up.
But it is, right?
Yeah.
Kafka Samza.
Kafka Streams is highly, highly influenced by Samza. It's exactly the same pattern behind it.
Yeah. So, but we want to start with Kafka Streams.
Well, it's a blog post. We go from top to bottom.
Yeah, true. But we could make our own decisions and then talk about Samza first, because, I mean, Streams...
I cannot live with this freedom, I cannot!
Yeah, okay, then go ahead with Kafka Streams.
So, actually, they utilize Kafka as kind of like the Unix pipe, where you concatenate a program that has some input and some output, where the input comes from a pipe, ideally, and the output goes to a pipe. So standard in, standard out would be equivalent to a Kafka topic, and so your program will read from a topic, do stuff, and then maybe write back to the same topic or write back to another topic, and then the next program will read from a topic and so on and so forth.
But can it send back to the same topic?
Yes, of course.
Wouldn't it
you
be
can.
A loop then?
Yeah, but you can do that.
Ah, good, okay, you can filter the input and then not read your own output.
Yeah, it's kind of like, why would you do that? But
yeah,
you can.
But let's say it would be more sane to write to a different topic, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, so it is designed as a library, so all you need is a dependency in your build tool, and then you're good to go. Your application will result ideally in a jar, and you will, once you launch your jar, which you do wherever you launch a jar, so basically you don't need to submit it to any kind of executor or runner or something like that, then that's a big distinction between all the other ones we had. Normally,
they try to solve everything.
Normally, you have your artifact, and then you need to submit your artifact to the processor or to the executor or to a runner. So executor, processor, runner, all the same. There is some infrastructure that does execute your code on the data that it holds. Mm. Where here, the data that are there are in Kafka, and what you do is you spawn up a new process somewhere, maybe on the same machine, maybe on a different machine.
In a Docker Swarm cluster.
For instance. And we just run it. So there is, of course, the disadvantage that you always transfer the data that you read across the wire. Always.
Yeah.
But to be honest, in every other distributed computing system, you distribute your data over the wire. That's all cool. What you... Kafka Streams currently has not exactly once delivery semantics.
But it will come, won't it?
It is scheduled to be a feature in the future versions, but it's not clear when they have it right. And it's quite hard, because you will then need to have the rescheduling and blah, blah, blah.
And maybe we will talk about it next time, but what... is a smarter idea anyways, I think, in my opinion at least, is that you have idempotent syncs. So you don't care about doing something twice, because if you push it to your backend, for instance, then if you push it twice, it should just override what you already have, but not duplicate it. So that you, for instance, in Matrix, with graphite, if you push a matrix twice, it will override itself, but you won't do any harm. So you can push one metric like 500 times, and then you will come up with the same result.
Yeah, ideally, but not everything behaves like that. Sure. Or you need to model it specially.
But if you have data sinks that are idempotent, then...
Yeah, that's normally what we would like to do. That's
Yeah, and then you don't care about this complex... exactly once delivery thingy.
Well, the problem would be, so you say today I had like 1 million users and I saw them, and you make the same analytics the one day after, and you might have 1.1 million users, because all your like the 100,000 users that you were not counting due to a network partition never showed up in your Kafka topic. They just showed up one day later. So now you have, I have this result for that date on that date, and I have this result for that date on the next day. That's a different result, which is right.
Mm. Yeah, no. Yeah, okay, but
that's not solvable, basically.
But this aggregation, maybe your data source is your web server logs, then your data sync is Elasticsearch, and Kafka Stream is to refine or to push it. Oh, no, that's not right. To separate the logs a little bit, to organize it a little bit. It's okay.
You can enrich them. So, for instance, you log your IP addresses, and then you have you stream your logs through Kafka. You have a Kafka streaming job running that picks out the IP in that log, and now goes to a service that makes up geolocation for IP addresses, and then enriches your log file, and then sends the enriched log file to Elasticsearch.
Okay,
that would be a typical. Your business needs this. You want to have like nice Kibana dashboard with over the world.
Or you create
events.
A session, and then you have the session somewhere stored, and then
and that's all useful. But Kafka Streams explicitly say that we are not there yet, where we go for really big analytics job or BI scenarios. We are there to make your microservice architecture move smoothly and fault tolerant and reactive and fast, basically. So this is not like Spark or Flume or Trident on top of Storm, where you have machine learning capabilities, or you have a batch processor somewhere, or you have graph engine. That is just reading from streams, doing stuff with the data, writing back to streams, and then do something with the result, but be fault tolerant, highly distributed, and actually very fast. And the blog post also mentions the notion of Kafka Connect. So together with the streaming API and Kafka Connect, you would actually write less code. You would just handle your stream. You'd be connected to Kafka on the one side, and then you use Kafka Connect to model your data sync. For instance, in the scenario you just mentioned, where we enrich log files to Elasticsearch, we would actually not write our own code to go and connect to Elasticsearch, make all the code working to send everything to Elasticsearch, but we would use Kafka Connect, so which means our streaming program, our small one, would just emit its output to a Kafka topic, and then we would have a Kafka Connect jar that would basically subscribe to our result topic and will then take care about everything Elasticsearch.
Your transformation job is only doing transformation from Kafka to Kafka.
Single responsibility.
Yes.
That's very nice. And also like the fault tolerance that needs to be managed in terms of like brokers going down in Kafka, and everything that's handled with Kafka Connect.
And your job of creating the information or fetching the information about geo information from an IP, that's also a Kafka Stream job that creates another Kafka topic, which your enrich Kafka is also subscribing to, and then consolidates both streams to one.
That's what you can model. You can now join streams, because the new consumer API, you can subscribe to multiple streams. and then you get these stream tuples together. Yeah. But this is like a zipper. I don't know if you know this.
Zipper.
So that works fine if event and processing time are good with each other.
Yeah.
So if all is in line and the data just flows as regular and you don't have any problems, that's cool. But now think of like joining two streams where the other one has hiccups.
Yeah. But in the use case we just described, it's not likely because you have one job that fetches the geolocation for a certain IP from one stream, and then another subsequent job that stems from the same stream and also uses your new created stream. So it's not that they are different sources. It's just one stream that is...
But still, you want to have like... Well, your event, what do you do? You wait for your geolocations for that, so you need to block.
Yeah, okay, if the geolocation is broken, then okay.
So it hicks up a bit. So what do you do in these? And that's not handled for you by Kafka Streams or somebody. So these kind of like, how do I behave in terms of errors and failures that might occur?
But you can have a timeout or something, right?
Of course, you would just there's a million things you can do, but all I'm saying is that Kafka Streaming API just provides you the ability to read and write and be very simple about it, and it's not there to do. They explicitly say this in the documentation. It's not there to be overly complex in what you're building.
Yeah.
And they will enhance this feature in the next releases. So, good stuff to come. I would recommend, like, there are two blog posts out on the Kafka Connect blog with examples for the streaming API that I definitely need to do myself.
It sounds cool because, you have your Kafka and then you have your Kafka streams and that's it.
Yeah. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Next thing is Apache Samza. So we already said that Kafka Streams is highly influenced by Apache Samza. So what is influenced is the notion that we can see Kafka as a Unix pipe. So we concatenate programs and their output together using the pipe pattern, and the pipe would be in this case Apache Kafka. Which is different in Samza is that it has again this notion of an executor or runner, which is in this case for Samza currently Yarn, but there are Docker enthusiasts who think that a Docker engine might also work as an executor. I never looked into it, and so I wouldn't say there's a special notion in Apache Samza which is not in Kafka Streams, and it's very unique, and that is Apache Samza job will have local state. So you will have the need for local state in terms of like windowing, what we mentioned earlier in the show. So a Samza job has a key value store with it where it can store a data for a certain window. So now you can, with this, you can now model again exactly once delivery, because you know if you see a key value pair twice or not, and you can be idempotent with it, because you just override the key with its value and you don't care so much. Now, if a Samza job fails, there's a neat idea that all that has been written to the key value store was also written to a specific Kafka topic having the job ID. So the job dies, and all that needs to be done by Yarn is to rerun the container. Samza jobs are called containers. Confusing, but anyway. And what the job does is looks up, do I have a topic with my ID? Oh yeah. I refill my state back from a Kafka topic, apply everything to my local key value store, and reprocess from where I was, because the last entry in my stream of key value pairs was the last change I did that I committed, and I know exactly where I were. So you don't need to rerun everything from the beginning of everything. You can just continue, and that's a very nice property of Samza,
and that makes sense.
Very, very cool. The only thing that I don't like so much is like running and Yarn and Hadoop stuff, stack. For me, it's still a pain in the ass. I never managed actually to do it successfully. But of course, people do that. And once you have it, there you don't need to worry about this.
Yeah, I made a Hello World of Samza, and there's, and I think what I kind of a little bit dislike, and but I didn't know if they enhanced the documentation, because they have only one Hello World example on their website for the Hello World, Hello World.
Yeah, that would be another critique. The documentation is quite not so sophisticated.
Yeah, and I ran it in a container, obviously, because I like Docker anyways. But and you could do it as well. The jar that's your Samza job, you can start it locally or in a container. And yeah, but I'm not sure if you have multiple tasks of the same job, then maybe it's not. But yeah,
I think you can. You would be able to. What we saw with what you showed is possible now with Docker 12 and Swarm, where you can actually say we want to have these many instances of something. Exactly. So once the Samza job dies, it will have a scale of 0, which is not what you want. So you want to have a scale of 3, so it will relaunch everything, and that's good.
Yeah.
Should just work.
Should be easy.
It's just that the Yarn runner, I don't know if he actually calls Java minus jar, blah, 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 or if he does some other magic, like unpacking the jar that you submitted and then compile something on every different... I don't know what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, but this is what I don't like, that I don't know. I mean, it's yet another resource negotiator. I mean, it's... Yeah, anyway.
It says it all.
Yeah, it says it all.
So Samza, definitely really nice properties and really nice idea how to, like, do continuous computing.
And it's still a little bit, I mean, it's Kafka streams are similar, but you don't have this local state thingy. So it's a little
bit you have your local state because it doesn't use a key value store, or maybe it does. I have to look it up actually.
In Kafka stream.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Might be. Or you can actually, you are free to do this or do not.
Yeah, you can do it on your own.
The streaming API just goes subscribe to the stream, give me all that data, and then it has some nice functionality that goes join, map, filter, blah, blah, blah. All what you expect on a continuous unbounded data set.
But you have to model it yourself in Kafka streams.
Yeah.
For now. Maybe they will come up with the same. Okay, cool. So let's go to Apache Flink.
And then we stop. I'm tired already, and you are tired too.
But it's... Oh, no. It's. But we have 3 to go. Come on, let's go through it.
Okay, Apache Flink. You like it. I'm not.
Yeah, I like it because I When I came to Berlin, I joined the Apache Flink meetup group. And they have good documentation.
Yeah.
And I attended one day workshop, actually, which was also very nice. The problem was, and I'm not sure if it's still the case, they use Akka, which binds to, or bounded to, a distinct IP address. So I have the same problem that I have in other environments, where you cannot run it behind this nutted network of containers. So you cannot say, I spawn like 5 jobs on my laptop and it's behind the nutted job, because they need to expose the rooted IP address. Maybe that's too technical now, but it was not containerizable. That was a little bit of a critique for me. But apart from that, they have like Grave processing, streaming, batch processing, machine learning. I mean,
they now have a SQL query engine. That what I learned on the Berlin buzzwords. I think it's a huge thing, and like any huge thing with a huge code base, it's very likely that you get lost in it.
That
bugs are occur, that bugs will not be fixed. your bugs won't be fixed. As far as I know, the most of this stuff is also written in Scala, so to help yourself, you would need to be a decent Scala programmer, and which is fine or not, depends on what you like and not. You would also compose and need a reasonable engineering amount to actually solve your problems. You have a whole lot of tools at hand that all work quite differently, and I think what's more concise in Spark is that it doesn't matter which API you really use, you always handle data with RDDs, where in Flink you have this and that, and there are a whole bunch of abstractions and ways to do stuff, and maybe if you get good training and you iterate nicely towards your solution, you will definitely get there. And it's like, it provides a whole lot of stuff, and it's relatively new. So everybody who is like in a reasonable position at the Flink community has seen all the faults from all the frameworks before. So maybe they learned a lot of stuff, and it has exactly one semantic out of the box, which is very important.
Yeah, and it's a very rich thing, but maybe that's kind of a problem as well, because if you know you need this Kafka Stream thing, then stick with Kafka Stream, because you are not like confused with all the possibilities.
Yeah. If you can break down your solution into a simple one,
then use the simpler one.
Yeah, always go for the simpler solution. And also, if you just need graph processing, or you just need SQL streaming, or you just need blah blah blah, maybe you're better off with like a simpler thing. Yeah. Because to be honest, when you now have a server, 32 cores, 256 gigabyte of memory, SSDs, you just use the Unix tools. AWK and JQ and you can do a lot with these machines today, and not every big data is big data nowadays. So Apache Beam.
This seems to be an abstraction, right? Above the aforementioned.
Yeah, they say it's the latest addition to the growing list of streaming projects at the Apache Software Foundation. The name is the project. Of this project signifies the design, which is a combination of batch and stream processing. Beam. Google, along with data artisans Cloudera and PayPal, donated the SDK of its big data services Cloud Data Flow to the Apache Software Foundation, which has become the foundation of Apache Beam. A pipeline is a chain of processes that work on a data set. Each Beam program will have a runner for the backend depending on where the pipeline is executed. Runners include Google Cloud Dataflow, Flink, and Apache Spark. Other runners such as Storm and MapReduce are in the works.
It's like an abstraction over all or most or some of the big data projects.
Yeah.
So you can say run this in Flink, and then afterwards run this in Spark, and then
what is nice is that you can use Google Cloud to do it, and once it gets too expensive, and you want to have a dedicated on-premise solution, you call up your SRE in the bunker of your big.
You go down.
Or you go down. No, you don't go down. You call him up. So they move.
We love SREs, by the way.
Yeah, we like SREs. And I like them, you love them.
I love them.
you can then just install one of these runners and you can use the same code and just execute it nicely and fine.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's like Google for the rest of us, Google infrastructure for the rest of us, and that's always scary.
Yeah, it is a bit scary.
I think it's a bigger thing than even...
But I saw this presentation also. I mentioned it, I think, in the Berlin Buzzword thing. So on the second day, my last talk was from one of the Google evangelists who showed this. And to be honest, that's nice. It works. It worked.
It worked, kinda.
And not kinda.
Not only kinda.
Not only kinda, but it really worked. And you have exactly one semantics. You don't see the hassle of really working machines. It's serverless. It's serverless.
Yeah.
Just comes up with a result magically.
But you don't need servers.
But no, there was a good show he put on there. Just connecting here. I have some SIP in S3 here. I have an SQL database there. I know the logins, blah, blah, blah. Here's my connector from here. Here's my streamer from there. Now I do this. And here I can just, I get this pre-computed function where it does an inner join. I join on this key. Before there, I need to plug in like a transformer that makes the key lowercase so that they matches up on the row. And bam.
Bam.
It was really bam and boom, but in terms of complexity behind it, I bet there's a lot to it.
Yeah, good, but it's maybe even a good choice because you're kind of future-proof, right?
Yeah, it
is an abstraction above all this.
Yeah, and
nitty-gritty details.
The other blog post I mentioned that we want to go into in the next few episodes are actually from one of the Dataflow designers. So he knows a lot about stream processing. And it's not that Google, like maybe they are Americans, but maybe not. So this is like, it's properly engineered. It's Google stuff and they want to work with it. They have worked with it and it's their replacement for their own MapReduce style of computing.
So it's not a Ford Chevrolet 1965.
It's not even a Ford Chevrolet 2016, which is still a piece of...
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we came along so good and now you're about America.
Yeah, but no, maybe, no. I just stopped it. It's a joke and I used to watch too much Top Gear and They make a hole.
They left. It's so someone much. Else's fault that you ranted. You just pass along the rant.
I'm sorry. Maybe
sorry for the sorry.
Maybe I have Tourette's regarding.
It's just German humor.
American quality.
Okay, before you go deeper into the shit, Apache Ignite.
Never heard of it.
In-memory layer built on top of a distributed in-memory computer. I heard about it from a friend in India, of all places, and he said that, so he works for Tata, you know Tata?
Oh.
They build cars, but I think it's like Siemens in India, they do everything. They have also an IT department and they make enterprise IP.
Is that not the company who bought Jaguar from the Brits?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe. And anyway, they have IT, consulting and stuff. And he said that his next project will be Apache Ignite, where you put like the data into an in-memory database and you can do stuff with this in-memory data.
So, maybe it's the open source version of SAP's HANA.
Yeah, I guess so. Kind of. It's not that you only put your intermediate data into memory. You put like your data in memory.
And you need a lot of memory.
You need a lot of memory, depending on how much data you have.
Hmm.
And I think it's even distributed, but I'm not sure.
And they say it's made for stock trading, fraud detection, and real-time modeling and analysis.
Hmm. Yeah, because it's blazing fast.
Ah, blazing fast. That's good. All others say on their front page, we are not blazing fast.
Yeah, you see here on this picture. I mean, mm-hmm. it's good for a podcast to have a picture, but
yeah, it's colorful.
It's colorful.
It has arrows.
You have multiple nodes, multiple Ignite nodes, and they have this one big in-memory data where you push data through, and you can have SQL queries or I guess other queries as well on this data, and this is freaking fast, obviously. I haven't used it, but the sample use case, according to the thing, is applications that heavily rely on programmatic real-time analytics, machine-to-machine communication, and high-performance transactional variable. Okay, that's like buzzword. But
transactional actually means like there are some things you want to have in a transaction, like asset.
Yeah.
Asset.
Asset. Atomic.
Atomic.
And the other thing.
The other things.
Consistent.
Some consistency. Isolated.
Isolated and
durable.
Durable, yeah.
Wow, just get across the corner.
Woo! Yeah, so, but yeah, this is not sure if it's a streaming processing thing then.
It sounds to me like stuck all your data in here.
Yeah.
Process them now, get results, and then slowly maybe like move them out, like for stock trading or something, you want to have the latest ticks in it. And you don't care so much about yesterday, but then maybe you make historical analysis and you just add more memory and then you can go over like last year.
The benefit here seems to be only that it's like in memory.
In-memory transaction architecture makes
it much faster than what is possible with traditional disk-based or flash-based technologies.
Yeah, okay. But to be honest, all other things try to mimic SQL query capabilities, but it's quite hard because it's set theory and that's not, I mean, it's basically solved, but not easy to execute. So if they solve this and you can run huge SQL queries across huge data sets, that would be a plus. And and be transactional.
Always good.
It's also good. But what happened? Yeah, well, I never used it. So I don't know if like, for instance, yesterday. Oh, no, we cannot tell it. Imagine there would be a power outage. I don't know. So you want to have this in multiple data centers, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I mean, in memory, you know this joke from Redis?
I think you once told it, but repeat it.
I need to go. So you, like the server says, so you use Redis, and I got a power outage, and for some reasons, I'm the dick now. Because he forgot all the data, right? Because Redis stores everything in memory. Once the power is off, your data is gone.
Oh, but there is something cool coming up now. There is a DIMM, so this actually memory thingy,
yeah,
which is durable.
What?
Yeah, you can put this DIMM into, and I forgot the name. Anyway, but
durable,
it's like a DIMM.
DD.
You put it in, and it is a buffer. It will be durable after reboot. So you can even in the newest Linux kernel, you can use this as a block device. So you have like 64 gigabyte block device that is not a flash SSD. It's just a memory DIMM, and this is blazing fucking fast.
Wow.
And this is crazy shit. This I want. And then you put Elasticsearch and all this cool, all this everything on this block device, which has latency in nanoseconds and like 200 gigabytes a second or more, or what is the current? It's like
it's
a run.
Amazingly.
It's amazing. It's like a RAMFS without the durability problem. That's crazy shit. I want this. I have to send an email to our
manager. Great.
I want this.
Can we have it in a laptop? Maybe we don't need it.
Yeah, you can if you have like a DIMM.
We can reintroduce the CD slot and make it a
okay.
game slot.
But
yeah,
now
we are through. Yeah.
I have one last thing that I would like to mention. I mean, Logstash, how does this apply to this? Isn't it also some kind of real streaming processing?
I think Logstash is more, you can maybe compare it to Flume because it just shifts data around. I think like Flume, for me, it doesn't apply to be a processor.
No, but Flume, you collect and then you send to someone else and then they consolidate the inputs. But within Flume, there's no much magic. You have to connect different Flumes. But within Logstash or Greylog, which is from Havrock, you have like a streaming data pipeline within, well, as far as I understood it, and I think it's true. You can have your log coming in, then you split up the different parts in the log, and then you have a pipeline within this too, and then you push it out to different outputs. You can cache different.
But I don't know
things.
How, like, is the Logstash server by itself distributed and fault tolerant?
Nah, okay, that's not true, yeah. That's true.
Will he,
single.
What happens if he goes down and comes up again? And what if you have hard disk failures? There's a lot of properties that the others solve for some reasons or in different ways. It might not apply to Logstash here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a single server. It's not a distributed service. Yeah, true. I mean, you could send it to... You could send it to two same, so equal pipes.
Oh, yeah, but...
But that's not really
now,
smart.
Now one goes down, the other one goes down. Some idiot turns on and off again.
Three.
Yeah, you just take three, right.
And no matter what you say, plus one.
Yeah. Layoff in direction.
Five go down, have six.
Yeah, it's just easy. Solve a problem, man.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
I'm not so unsatisfied today with the podcast.
No, it was nice. I think it was cool. And we have a lot of stuff to continue with this. I mean...
Yeah, but first we need to really work it out.
Work it out. Yeah. And I will just right away create a container of Niffy, I think. I would like to see. Okay, cool. Then we try to make it once a week.
Tomorrow would be good because half of the week I'm single again. And
tomorrow?
Next week, sorry. Next week would be good because half of the week I'm single again.
Ooh.
So I have time in the morning and time in the evening.
Oh, and we can go drinking.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Can we use other drugs that where you don't get headache from?
Like sugar. We are in a podcast, dude. Okay, guys. Next week.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.